either I got to go or you got to go. If you don't, I'm looking to buy the business for whatever it's really worth. We'll get a valuation on the business. We'll get appraisal on it, and or I'm gonna go start my own business and do the same thing. And I was the villain in the family for about a year, and today I'm the hero in the family. So it all works out.
Welcome to Give a Heck. I am your host, Dwight Heck, and for much of my life, lived my life in quiet desperation, wondering how I was going to pay the bills, take vacations, save for retirement, and one day wondering if I would get off the hamster wheel of life and have purpose. A life that most of society lives, which takes us to work, then home, then repeat, and pays us hopefully enough just to survive. The harsh truth that most live with more month than money and have no idea how to live life on purpose, not by accident. This ensures the mass majority are living not just financially broke, however emotionally and mentally as well due to financial pressures. In each episode, I will introduce you to thoughts, ideas, and guests that can help you to learn how you too can live life on purpose, not by accident.
Good day and welcome to Give a Heck. On today's show, I welcome Stephen Lagomarsino. Stephen embodies the transformative power of entrepreneurship and unwavering pursuit of excellence. As the influential president of TRC Electronics, he has elevated the company to a leading position in the power electronics distribution sector. More than just a business leader, Stephen is a source of empowerment, equipping his team with necessary inspiration and resources for success in their professional and personal lives. His journey into entrepreneurship was influenced by his family, with a father and grandfather who are entrepreneurs themselves. Stephen set out not only to follow in their footsteps, but to surpass their achievements, transforming a modest family business into an enterprise of remarkable success. His approach to innovation and growth is demonstrated in his progression from a warehouse associate during his school years to a leader in the industry, driving TRC Electronics to significant expansion. I'd like to welcome you to the show, Stephen. Thanks so much for agreeing to come on and share with us some of your life journey.
Hey, great to be here, Dwight.
I look forward to our conversation, especially when I my little listeners know I put a lot of effort into it. I go and read people's I literally will go through a person's bio, I'll Google their name, I went onto your YouTube channel, listened to a little bit of your podcast. I want to get that connection, that vibe with somebody, because you're giving me your time that you'll never get back. The people listening are giving me their time they'll never get back. So I want that time to be an investment in something that's going to help uplift them and obviously make them feel good at the end of the day. So I appreciate you coming on and being willing to invest some of your precious time away from your business, your family, and give it to my listeners and myself. So first and foremost, thank you.
And I appreciate that, because that's the difference between having a transformational conversation on a podcast versus somebody just having a transactional conversation on a podcast where they really don't learn anything about the individual that the guests are going to have on the podcast. And they go through a check mark of questions that they just can ask anybody, and there's really no context around those questions. So I really appreciate that.
Yeah, well, you deserve it. We all deserve it, right? We deserve for people to give a heck about us, right? Like, that's literally right. I've been on so many podcasts myself, especially people wanting to interview me about my book. And, you know, at the end of the day, that checkmark style of podcast, I feel, and this may sound wrong, but I feel dirty after it. I don't feel good. I feel like I need to, you know, if I was a day drinker, I might go have a cocktail. Like,
it's just a shower. Dwight, I've had that experience. One of the recent podcasts I did, I walked out of the room and I told my team, I said, I feel dirty right now. And I said to them, you know, I don't feel like I had a conversation. I felt like I just was interrogated. And it made me think, as a business leader and an entrepreneur, when you're hiring people and you're interviewing people, to make sure that you don't give that experience to people you're interviewing when you're bringing them into your business and considering them because how that conversation, if it's not a conversation, it's just simply like a check mark of questions on an interview, and it's not actually a transformational conversation. I think that what we're getting down to here right now, Dwight, is being genuinely curious about the individual and not just ask a question and then take the answer at face value and then go to the next question, take the answer at face value and then just go to the next question. So yeah, it's funny you said dirty because it's my exact words that I said when I had that experience.
Yeah, and I've had too many of them. And sadly today, it's like the flavor of the week for, you go to a coffee shop you like or ice cream, flavor of the week. And then all of a sudden that becomes that way in podcasts. People become podcasters because it's the thing to do. It's the flavor of the week. And they really don't know what they're doing. They don't put any effort. If people actually understood, I did a partial episode explaining how much effort it takes to do podcasting. Proper podcasting for me, from me doing the initial research and putting together all the information I put together with on numerous sheets to make sure there's a consistent flow, doesn't mean it's going to be a question. It's going to be a conversation, but I want to be prepared for somebody that's nervous.
Right.
So I can still bring the best out of them so that they can enhance their experience on podcasting. I spend 4 hours an episode before it goes live, and people go, really? That's a lot of time to invest. Absolutely.
Yeah.
But you wouldn't believe the blessings I've had out of it. 180 episodes later, the great people I've met, I've interviewed people from around the planet, from every country you can think of to obviously the US and my country of Canada. And I feel blessed, man. Like, honestly, people are going, I'm like episode 20 in and I'm going to quit. I just don't get it. And I'll ask, well, what effort do you put in? Well, I don't want to put in all that effort. I just think it should be a conversation where this person and I talk and that's it. Well, I said, there's no forethought there. Like, how can you make that a great conversation? But anyway, we'll beat this conversation to death. The listeners and people watching on the YouTube channel are thinking to themselves, okay, you've beaten that horse to death. Move on, Dwight. So I love podcasting, and I just believe that especially somebody that's passionate and young at it like you, I want to make sure that everybody realizes that it's a lot of effort to do a podcast, and we appreciate you listening. We appreciate you watching, and here we go. We're going to give you another great episode of Give a Heck.
Let's go.
Okay. So one of the things I mentioned before I hit record is that I like focusing on a person's origin story. And you already said that you're an open book, and I really appreciate that. So from your earliest recollections, Stephen, to where you are today, share whatever you want. Like, I get people that share stuff that they've said they've never talked about before. And if you want to do that, great. Like, this is an open book. It can be half the podcast, the origin story, because I will ask you questions within the origin if it's warranted. So please share.
Okay. This all leads to me being an entrepreneur, running an electronic wholesale distribution business, and then branching out into everything else and making impact, driving impact. So when I grew up as a kid growing up, I can remember every single birthday when I blew those candles out on my birthday, I wished for one thing. And that was to be really successful in life. It was just something that always meant a lot to me. And what that the definition of success has changed for me during my life. That's matured, I would say, because when you're younger, maybe you're thinking more transactional and more the financial component of it because you don't really appreciate and understand the rest of it. But growing up, that is one attribute I had and a drive I always had. And I always enjoyed building things. Like, I always wanted to build something. Whether, I'm a 2-3-year-old, 5-year-old boy, and I want to build, I'm building a Ford, I'm always creating, being using my imagination. But my imagination was always not so much artistic, but how am I going to build something? Just the fascination with having something that you want to build that was just going to be incredible. And growing up, my grandfather and my dad started the business TRC Electronics in 1982. I was only 8 years old at that time. And Prior to that, my grandfather owned a custom cabinet making business, which he retired and helped my dad go into business. So there was this entrepreneurial spirit in my family, my whole childhood. So that was the conversation. It's almost like the only thing I knew. I just always knew to start a business or to run a business. I just always had this mindset that I was going to lead a business, whether it was going to be my own business or someone else's business. I just needed to be the guy. So that was, for me growing up, we was always influenced by that. And
so you talked about every birthday you wish you were really successful. Was there a lot of learned behavior from your grandpa, your dad, or like who influenced that drive in you? Or were you just always naturally wanting to be successful because of it was just ingrained in you? Where did that come from?
I believe that some of it, because the opposite of that was so undesirable for me. Now, I think that whether it was maybe some trauma that was happening when I was a child, because the alternative was just not acceptable to me. And so when I thought about the alternative, it's about not being successful, not having this amazing life that you get to live one time. And I think that scared me a lot as a child, the fact that, wow, what if I grow up and I'm just average and I don't really do anything incredible? I'm not successful. I always wanted to be the best at whatever I did. And if I played a sport or a hobby, I didn't need to be all or nothing. But we're all in life. Like, we don't have a choice to play the game of life. And so for me, it was, okay, I'm in this game and it has to be all or nothing. I need to be the best the best that I can be. So, I think that alternative really terrified me.
So would you say as a child, now knowing the definition of what tenacity is, would you say you were a tenacious child then? They were somebody, because you said you always had to perform at a high level.
Yeah. I think about resilience, same thing. Yes, 100%. Yeah. Had resilience as a child, was resilient with my dad, was a really challenging guy to be a son too, especially being the first son. He was really, really tough on me. He was hard to impress. He was hard to get compliments from. That's changed a lot since then. It's the complete opposite now. But so that required for me to develop resilience. And resilience is something that there are levels of that. And as you climb the ladder of life and success, you got to be able to develop that resilience and increase it, because the falls are bigger the bigger you get. So that's a really important component.
Yeah, resilience is so important. I grew up with a father, very successful entrepreneur, his business, pushing broom, right? Working in the back as a young kid, never getting compliments, getting worked harder than he would do other people because he didn't want to, no nepotism here. He wanted to prove that I was there because I was going to be a good worker. And he'd always instill in me my whole life, you know what? I don't care what anybody pays you. This is your task. You do it 1,000,000%, not 10%. You always give it your all. But he never, when I heard my father say that he was proud of me, I was in my 50s and I'm in my 50s now. So you can, it wasn't very long ago, right? And he softened, just like, I love how you said that. That's why I smiled when you were sharing your story. My dad didn't give me the compliments. And now in his 80s, he's a completely different man. Now he's a lot more compassionate and kind and gives out compliments. And he's very supportive. Not that he wasn't then, but he was so focused on his entrepreneurship, on his business. His core values were different than what mine are. And it is what it is. It took me until I was in my 30s till I could look back and go, wow, my dad taught me a lot of things. Uh-huh. I don't know if you felt that way, but I know myself, I certainly did. My dad taught me more than I realized. And it took me to my 30s till I started my second career, my second business, entrepreneurship as a financial professional. So thank you for sharing that. I like how you talked about too. You always were building. You had that imagination and always were wanting to construct stuff. I find some of the most successful entrepreneurs have that mindset, right? They're always looking at creating. They're not looking at, you know, you look at the doom and gloom in the world today. What are people doing? They're tearing things down. Your right. attitude was, let's build things up. So yeah. wouldn't you agree that that's a problem in our society today? We need more of a building mindset.
Yeah, I love that. There's a couple of things I would add to that. So there's two components of that. One is being a builder, but also it's not being an entrepreneur requires you to think differently than what society is programmed us to think. And one of those aspects is about being positive versus negative. Okay, let's build something up versus destroy something. Because right now you see, you know, more people are interested in breaking something, tearing something down than actually building something and contributing to the world. And as an entrepreneur, if you're going to create and build, you're just not going to follow like what everybody tells you you should do. And you're going to ignore almost everybody that tells you why you can't do it, you know, why you're being unreasonable, you should be reasonable, you know, you're going to be so uncomfortable, you have enough, like you're going to ignore all this. So that requires this different type of mindset and this ability to tune it out and just know that, like, hey, I'm just so passionate about building this that if I listen to them, I'm not going to do it. So I have no choice but to ignore all this chirping I'm getting and what mainstream is basically programming us to do. And I got to go my own path. So yeah, I'm with you.
Associations are so important. Like that's what I popped into my mind when you were saying that the outside influence is the learned behavior that society tries to imprint on us, or the labeling they give where we're not being unreasonable, but somebody will use that in a setting of individuality or of a group and say, oh, he's being unreasonable, she's being unreasonable. And that label sticks with us when really we're not being unreasonable. Maybe we're questioning, maybe we're trying to learn, we're trying to climb, or we're trying to converse and work with them, but that person's not at the same level of us. Right.
Right.
So I get to a point in my life, my associations are very guarded. I'm quick to listen and not quick to respond to try to understand, right? What's the intentionality of this person? What is their reasoning for communicating with me that way? Did I do something? Do they have something going on? Maybe I need to step back and have this conversation another time. All these things race in my head, and it didn't happen. I didn't wake up one day and go, oh boy, look at this light bulb moment. I had to work on it. Being the best version of myself. But again, number one thing for my listeners and people watching, protect your associations, those that are really going to help build you up. And it's just not just people, the books you read, the podcasts, the shows you watch. Everything in your associations affects your 6 inches between your ears. So I would always encourage everybody to protect your associations. So I like what you had to say there. That was great.
Yeah. You show me the five people you spend the most time with. And I know what kind of person you are.
Oh, that's absolutely.
So you have to protect your environment, and what you just described, everything you need to do with the people that you surround yourself with, and that you allow to even the people that you will even allow to hit your subconscious mind, even though you know that they may be giving you information that's not helpful or hurtful, but just by you allowing yourself to just hear it, your subconscious mind is receiving it. And that's why it's important about what you listen to and watch on TV, what kind of podcast you're listening to, because all this messaging is going to hit your subconscious mind. Your conscious mind will prove your subconscious mind right. So it's really important.
Oh, absolutely. I know one of the things I've been coaching with my clients on the lifestyle side and helping them get over their 6 inches is a process called the 70-30 principle. We won't get into it today, but it's basically meant to help protect you from what you were just saying. You may be willing to be around somebody that's negative, but it still affects you, right?
Yes.
So learning to protect yourself. Right. And learning to protect the 6 inches between your ears and all the work and energy you've expended to make yourself the better version of yourself consistently is worth protecting. And it's okay to worry about you first before you worry about other people. And a lot of my clients will go, what? I've always been told to worry about everybody else first. Well, how is that working out for you? Right. And I'm not saying it to be nasty. I really want to know, because I had to get over my 6 inches between my ears, my learned behavior, the negativity, even though it wasn't negativity of my dad's clients and my dad himself, because that's just, that was their language, but it didn't have to be mine forever. And it doesn't have to be anybody's, right? So I appreciate
that. That's right. Yeah. Hey, Dwight, you know, on my podcast, Steve Lags Unfiltered, we talk about this where, hey, look, people need to hear what they need to hear, not what they want to hear. And what you need to hear are a couple of things. You need to, anyone negative and is a drainer in your life, you need to push them out of your life, no matter who they are. And if they're a family member, you create the amount of distance that's required and the boundaries that are required to protect yourself, because you are going to be less valuable and make less impact in this world if you let the bullshit come into your mind. It's just that simple, no matter who they are. And you could just be, you communicate with this with the people and let them know, hey, look, I'm going to be transparent. Do I have permission to be direct with you for a moment and explain exactly what it is? Because you'd be surprised all of a sudden, hey, whoa, okay, I want to be around Steve. I can't be a drainer. And all of a sudden their behavior is going to be modified a little bit. And if not, I'm just going to distance them. And the other thing is about being unreasonable. You know, no, damn, you have to be unreasonable. Like, it literally has to be unreasonable. Like, if think about this, if I had to save my daughter's life, would I take reasonable measures to save her life? No, I'd be completely unreasonable. So when I'm looking at accomplishing my goals, accomplishing the goals of my family, helping the people in my company accomplish their goals, I am so friggin' unreasonable about it. There is nothing reasonable about it whatsoever. Because when we're reasonable, we are going to be average people in this world. And you're going to be labeled, you better defend yourself. You're unreasonable. This is just not reasonable. You have to be more reasonable about this, Stephen. No, I am completely unreasonable about everything I want to accomplish in my life, and especially for the people who are coming along to ride with me.
I love that. And that's true. We do need to be unreasonable. What my point was earlier was that the labeling of people and their misinterpretation of what we're saying, because they're just not at the same level as us.
Yeah.
But you're right when it comes to being unreasonable. Absolutely. 100,000% agree that people just don't understand that. You know, again, with my family too, I had somebody ask me here recently, we were talking about something, and they mentioned the fact, well, if you had this choice in life, if you had to save a group of 100 people or save your own family, who are you saving? And I said, my family all day long. Well, it should be the majority over the minority. I said, okay, well, you do you, I'll do me. I'm protecting my family. And if that's unreasonable, pick me. I'm going to be unreasonable.
And also, you're entitled to that opinion, right? Like, you, there's no right or wrong. It's what's right for you, Dwight, right? It's
absolutely
like, who are they to judge you based on like what you would value more? That's really up to you to decide at the end of the day. And you know, when I hear people call me unreasonable, tell me I work too much, tell me I'm obsessed, they're all positive signs. I love it, because then I know I'm doing the right things. Because when I don't hear that from people that aren't in my inner circle, then I'm like, hey, do I look comfortable? Do I look like I'm being reasonable right now? Am I being reasonable? Because if I am, I need to be obsessed about what I want to accomplish. So that's a good sign when you hear that from people.
Oh, yeah. You're obsessed. When are you going to quit? When's enough? Like all those little things that people say to us, it's like, when's enough? When I take my last breath. That's when enough is enough. I'm always on the climb. I'm always elevated. I've spent too many times in my life allowing outside circumstances to keep me camped. And that ain't happening anymore. And it isn't going to happen. It hasn't happened for the last 25, 30 years of my life. And you aren't going to be the person that's going to be my anchor, right? I am going to be tenacious, because I feel tenacity is a superpower for one thing. And at the end of the day, those that don't like it, right? Next, I'll have a conversation with somebody once, a really good conversation, if they're willing to have a conversation, and give them the opportunity to share their opinions. But like they say, opinions are like assholes. Everybody's got one. Doesn't mean you have to take it at base value. You can be you, and you can be the ultimate version of you, and you're going to still attract 5 people, or attract 50,000 people that are going to follow you or are going to hang on every word of yours and go, you know what? That's Stephen guy. He's pretty amazing. He doesn't take no crap, but he gives good value. Good on you, Stephen. That's what I want in life.
That's right.
Right.
Have you, Have you ever had anybody that was really anchored in on you in life where, it took a while to figure out and then you realized, oh my God, this person's holding me back. Have you had that experience?
Oh, absolutely. That's how I developed my 70-30 coaching that I do for people. I understood the value of me and I started gauging it on, why did I pick 70-30? I don't know. It could have been 80-20. And I will share this with you then because you mentioned it. So if somebody's around me and 70% of the time they make me, as I'm walking away and I'm saying, see you, Stephen, I can't wait to see Stephen again, whether it's a month, 6 months, a year later, it don't matter. I'm happy. 30% of the time, Stephen, what he had to say didn't quite gel with me, but I still love the dude. He's pretty cool, right? But if any time in our existence it hits anything lower than that, you're gone. 50-50, forget it. If 50% of the time you make me want to vomit in my mouth, and 50% of the time I'm doing, I got to see Stephen. You know what? You're gone. And that's how I've been living my life now for so long. I don't have bad days anymore. I have bad moments. I have character building moments. I never say those negative words. Oh, I had a bad day. I never ever allow somebody to cripple my day either, just because of their negativity. But absolutely, I've run into people that have just been energy vampires. They're soul suckers. And it's just like, oh, 70-30. Okay, I've seen Stephen 5 times in the last 6 months. I have to assess our friendship, our association.
Right.
And decide to myself, what's more important, him or me? Guess what? Yeah. Me all day long.
Yeah. Tim Grover says it's be self first.
He's awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, he doesn't say be selfish. He says be self first. And what he's saying is that you're going to add a lot more value to the people that you love and care about if you take care of yourself first. It's just like when that oxygen falls down on the plane, what do they tell you to do? First thing to do, put the oxygen on your face before you try to help someone else. So some people use that as an excuse not to take care of themselves. They're all going to help everybody else and they avoid doing what they need to do for themselves.
Oh, absolutely. It floors me when I look back at my own existence prior to starting on the personal development game back in, 31 years ago. And I think to myself, the evolution of what I've gone through and how many people along the way tried pulling me back, right? It's like they threw a big lasso over my head and they're pulling me back. And it's just, and I allowed it to happen, right? Yeah. We are our own worst enemies. That saying is so true. But you know what? Personal development, like you talked about the coach there talking about what we're supposed to do. And I look at all the people I've followed in my life. Are they all perfect? What do they all talk about? They had struggles.
Yeah.
The difference between them and everybody else is they learned to climb out of that cesspool of garbage that was holding their mental and emotional and their physical mindset back. So I appreciate you sharing that. One of the things I did want to get into and talking about with personal development is core values. What is your take on core values? And do you live by core values yourself?
Yeah, 100%. So trustworthy, resilient, committed, intentional, transparent, accountable, disciplined. Those are our core values in my business, like TRC Electronics. They're also my core values in my life. So I filter all the people through those filters for whether they're going to come in my business or they're going to be in my life. So they've got to be aligned with those core values. So the way we use them in business and the way me as a leadership coach and business advisor, I coach other people, other entrepreneurs, is you want to hire, fire, and reward based on core values. So when you select a core value, it should be a single word, should be very simple. You know, you want like 5 to 8 core values. But they've got to be core values that you can make a decision whether to hire based on that, whether to reward an employee based on that, or whether to exit an employee from an organization based on that. You know, like love can't be a core value because you can't fire or hire. You know, you got to make sure that there are values that you can use that way in your business. And when we got really tight on designing our culture very intentionally, maybe about 4 years ago in our business, it completely changed. It was one of the first things we needed to do to really intentionally redesign the culture in my organization. And then you don't have any drama in the organization. We actually have every new candidate before they get hired. One of the steps in the interview process is to present a presentation for 6 to 7 minutes on our core values. And we determine in that particular presentation if they're fully aligned with our core values. And if we don't feel confident, we won't bring them in our organization.
Well, that's smart though, because I know with me, with core values, I think of computers. You know how a computer program, because I used to be a programmer at one time too, it has this, there's a decision tree, right? Literally you could draw it out as a decision tree and literally have logic to it. And I do the same things. I listen to people, not just what they say. I look at their body language. I listen to their tonality. I listen to what they say to me. And I'll have a conversation to actually extract from them to see how they're going to respond. And my brain, which is a giant computer, all of our brains are, is literally going, okay, against this core value. And I get down to the decision tree and it's either yay or nay. That simple. And it's that quick. So even core values, I believe, are something that need to be practiced. So I love that 6 to 8 minute video, like putting somebody on the spot also sees if they have leadership potential. And it's very imperative.
It's a live presentation. We have them come into our office and present live to a leadership team. Okay. And then we'll follow up with questions. There's a couple things. Not only do you get them in the line, but are they willing to make the commitment to prepare for that presentation? How much do they prepare? If they're not going to prepare to get the job, to what level do you think they're going to be prepared when doing the job? And then also, can they handle a little bit of pressure? Because sooner or later, everyone's going to get under a little bit of pressure. Can they handle that? Even if they're nervous, that's okay, as long as they get it done. And then you get to have some follow-up questions and we'll have a little bit of conversation about that. So I find that's really useful.
Yeah, I've never heard of anybody that's done that. So I think that's fantastic. It is, for those listening or watching, I know myself, that is something that is very intriguing, because when you actually put somebody on the spot, right, make them do it live, it is something, as you mentioned, you could be nervous, but can they work past it? Are they still giving thoughtful responses, even though they're nervous? Because we're all nervous. I remember the first time I was ever invited to speak on stage 21 years ago in front of, you know, people and do presentations and do workshops and training and stuff like that. My goodness, thank goodness I was wearing back then, still wearing suits, and I had just giant sweat pockets, and I was already balding at the time. I had sweat dripping down my face and I was wiping. It was horrible. Yet I had people come up after me, that information was fantastic and blah, blah, blah. And thank goodness, because my heart was about to explode out of my chest. That's how nervous I was. And every time I did it after the fact, I got better and better and better, right? Yeah. Practice works, right?
And courage, because you had the courage to keep doing something that made you nervous as opposed to avoiding it. I can totally relate. I would have an anxiety attack doing a presentation in front of one person in my beginning of my career. That was really rough for me, and I had to overcome that. But it's about having the courage to keep doing something that is tremendously uncomfortable, because you have purpose and you're so driven, because you understand why you're doing what you're doing. And it's like so many people in this world, as soon as they hit an obstacle that makes them uncomfortable, they'll find somebody to tell them to take a detour, and you don't need to be uncomfortable. Oh, you just shouldn't do that. Like, you know, like, hey, if it hurts, don't do it. No, if it hurts, as long as you're not injuring you, go do it. And you know, same thing. I mean, I took some classes. I was like, what do I got to do to get over this?
And I did too.
Yeah, and irony is, like you said, you're usually the only one that knows how nervous you are. And if only someone would have told guys like us back then that was totally normal, probably would have reduced it by about 50%. If I had someone saying to me, hey, that's totally cool, because I was that way too, but I didn't have anyone at that time, you know, giving me that reassurance.
Neither did I.
Did you think something was wrong with you? Because I would go, I'm like, I'm defective. What's wrong with me?
I started researching with a bunch of other business people. We were all at the same, starting in the finance world around the same time. And the brokerage I was working out of where I was running my own brokerage out of the agency I was working out of, they brought in a guy from the US by the name of Blair Singer. You may not know who he is, but he's a very famous individual in the US for helping people. He had a program called Sales Dogs, and he has different programs and strengthening. And it was the first time that I ever went to a session. I seen him a couple different times where he break an arrow, right? He's giving you confidence, and he'd get us, you know, who of you out here is willing to go up on stage and speak? And I was like, don't put your arm up. Don't put your arm up. Guess what? My arm went up and I got pulled up on stage, and I'm like literally a wreck. And he's standing beside me, maybe 5 feet away, and he's coaching me. Okay, yeah. That's okay. Keep on going. Keep on going. And when it was done, I was like, okay, let's do this. And he dissected it. And there's like, I don't know, 1,000 people in the room.
Yeah.
Dissected it and said, okay, try doing it this way. And I'm like, here, have some water. Right? Yeah. It was amazing. But every single time I've pushed myself past, right? And like I live by it, and the adage that, you know, fear knocked at the door, faith answered, nobody was there, right? Mm-hmm. I have faith in myself. Faith isn't always about other things or God or, you know, it's, I had faith in myself that I knew I could always traverse the uncomfortable. And that's what I did. I went to things like that to help me. I flew to the US to different events. I did a lot of reading, right?
Yeah.
Would have been great if I would have had an awesome mentor like you, they're talking about, but I had to find my mentors. I had to find the Blair Singers. I had to find Anthony Robbins. I had to find Stephen Covey. I had to find Dr. Schwartz. I had to find, you know, Dale Carnegie, all those people, right? All the books, all the tapes, all the, yes, I'm dating myself, listeners, the tapes, cassette tapes. And then gravitating up to CDs and stuff like that. Life is fun, but you got to be willing to step out of your comfort zone.
That's right. And you've got to go to your mentors, and you can find them. And then not only that, but you could attract them into your life too. And I've been able to do that. That's been like so tremendous for me because, you know, I think about like Sharon Lecter. I attracted her into my life. Brandon Dawson, Grant Cardone. These are all individuals that were really big impactful mentors for me, and studying them from a distance, and I was able to bring them into my life. So you got to go out there, and but what you put out into the world, you will attract, and you can bring that into your life. And I think a lot of people underestimate the possibilities, and I did at one point, of how close you can ultimately get to your mentors, the ones that are still living.
Yeah, Sharon Lecter, amazing, right? And obviously the other people you mentioned as well, but that's somebody that I've really never personally met her, but have been affected by her in a really good positive way. So one of the things I wanted to ask you too, you mentioned that we didn't really, either of us, have anybody really come up to us and say, hey, you know, it's okay to be like that. It's okay to have this go on. Who is the one person in your life that really sticks in your mind that helped you on your personal development journey, that got you to the point that you're at, that was that catalyst? It may not have been in your life your whole life, but was that catalyst, that spark to make you achieve so much?
Yeah, there was a book, and I read it in 2018 because I didn't have that in my life and I was struggling with that. And I read Be Obsessed or Be Average by Grant Cardone. And that book changed everything for me, because that book gave me permission that I was looking for to be totally obsessed with being successful, becoming super wealthy, develop an incredible mindset, being super healthy physically and mentally, and driving impact. It gave me the permission to do all of that, because I wasn't finding that from anywhere else until that. And then that opened the door to everything else, to everything else for me.
Well, thank you for sharing that. Yeah, Grant's a pretty cool guy. He's an acquired taste for some, though. I will say that. All right.
I run his leadership him and Brandon Dawson have a business mastery leadership program. We have like 400 people in that program, all entrepreneurs. I lead that program for them, and I'm also a 10X business advisor, where I advise other businesses. So they've got, Grant's the guy. He's very loud, and he's going to tell you exactly the way it is, but he really gets it.
Yeah, I the first time I ever seen him speak was because of Ed Mylett. Ed Mylett had him at an event to speak, and yeah, I was just like, I was in first, second row because I'm the type of person that goes to conferences. Like, why are you sitting the back? Like, you know what I mean? Like, when I go to church, I sit in the front. When I go to a conference, I sit in the front. When I go to a movie, I sit in the front. When I go to a concert, I want to be at the front. I don't want all that distraction and crap going on behind me, right? I want to be first and foremost touched by what's going on. So yeah, Grant was, I still remember the first time I seen him speak. I think it was 2015, 2016. I still remember the first time I, and again, another thing that Ed put on that I qualified to go to, he had, what's his name now? Geez, I just completely had a brain fart, but it's associations, right? Andy Frisella, some of the, like I belong to, I don't anymore, but for many years I belonged to the Arte Syndicate. I don't know if you've heard of it. It's, you know, with Andy and Ed, they started a organization up of like-minded entrepreneurs who were all always on the climb and accelerated. And some of the people I've, like Jesse Eisler, or some of the people I've seen speak at the different events that Arte held, like it's just people that are, you can see their energy. They're just jumping and hopping on stage. They're very approachable. They're coming out and talking to you after the fact. They're not hiding in the green room and jumping on their jet and flying away, right? So we've had a lot of commonalities and similarities. So I appreciate you sharing that. What would be one of the most profound moments you experienced besides Grant on your development journey since 2018?
Yeah, then a profound moment was, so when I earlier I mentioned how the definition of success evolves as you mature, and for me, what it started becoming clear, success, what my success wasn't going to be measured how successful I was. It was going to be measured how many successful people I helped, I led, or I developed, or I impacted, or I made I helped them make it possible. You know, you've got to do it yourself. And when I realized that, and I was struggling to find an entrepreneur, at that point, I'm like, okay, who is a mentor that's not only been super successful as an entrepreneur, but it's brought everyone along for the ride? And so some of them have, but they don't share it. So you don't even know who, they're not transparent enough. So it's hard to find. And that was for me, thinking to myself, my wife and I would sit around and I'd say, this person's a unicorn. I'm never going to find this person because mentorship is so important. You have to be, you're a business owner, you need a mentor, you need a coach. You have to have someone that's going to bring you to the next level or teach you the things you're missing to get to the next level. Or you can do it yourself and trial and error, and you can make a lot of mistakes. People are going to pay for it. It's going to take you longer. So for me, that was really impactful and a game changer for me because it made my life so much more fulfilling. It made everything, the value that I bring to other people in this world just is so much higher than it would be if it's just a transactional, hey, let's chase the dollar and not worry about anything else.
Yeah, it is profound. We must have, like myself, belonging to masterminds, and not all masterminds are made the same way. I know the person's mastermind that I've been friends with for a long time is somebody I met through Arte. His name's Tony Watley, and Tony was a student of Lewis Howes. And Lewis Howes was his mentor and still is today. Tony's my mentor. There was things that Tony learned from Lewis, and I've been to some of Lewis's events, which are unbelievably astounding. Like he's man, that guy's a ball of energy. But anyway, besides that, my point is that it flows downhill in a good way, right? Is Tony still Tony? Absolutely. But he took some good things. Like when you go to Life Buffet, I talk about a buffet all the time. You go to a buffet, you don't eat everything. You don't satiate
That's right.
yourself on everything. You eat things you like, and then you keep on going back. Well, you keep on going back to Lewis Howes. I go back to Tony. I still follow Andy and Ed. I still connect to a lot of the people in that organization because I was part of it for 4 years. I belong to a mastermind for speakers, authors, and coaches. I belong to a mastermind for podcasting. Is that my life? No. but sometimes I become weak and I need to go and satiate myself at the buffet and I need to have a correction. I need to have that phone call with Tony or that text to him because he lives in Texas. And I'll say, hey, brother, this is what I'm going through. What do you think? Right. Yeah. Sometimes I need to be, you know, mentally slapped in a good way to correct myself. So I agree. Mentorship is so important and so underrated for most people. And usually it's the committee of they, I call them. They think you should do this. They think you should stop doing this. They think you're aspiring to do too much. You're burning yourself out. They all have this going on. Whereas a mentor, they don't get it because the mentor is going to tell them something that might hurt their feelings.
Yeah.
You know?
And, you know, what ends up happening when you spend time or in these masterminds or with your mentor, you get inspiration because, you know, as a business owner, especially if you're a business owner, you need to be the visionary. And you need to go outside the walls of your business and go out to bigger thinkers that have done more than you to raise your belief, raise your confidence, and also to get inspired by them so that you come back and all of a sudden now building creativity, belief in what's possible to build, and everything just increases and changes. And you got to do that so often.
Absolutely. So we're all definitely on the same page. I'm really enjoying this conversation. I'm going to pivot a little bit different here, though. I have a question for you that I was thinking when I was reading up on you. I thought, you know what? I'm going to ask him this question and see what his response is. Okay. So in my 30 plus years of being in business myself, I found there's two schools of thought. One is that school is not required to be a successful entrepreneur, that the school of hard knocks teaches one more. Second is, of course, go to school, learn about whatever you're interested in, give it one more step up to become, you know, give you a step up to become more successful. What are your thoughts of no school versus school?
I'm going to assume school means college.
Yes.
Okay.
And sorry. Yes.
Yeah. So they're both right answers because I know billionaires that never went to college. So they didn't need school. They didn't need to go to college. I think that my opinion with college is, and I have three daughters, if you're going to go to college, it needs to be intentional. And like, for instance, I went to college for electrical engineering. I needed an electrical engineering degree to be qualified in my field. That was a good investment for me. If you're going to be a doctor, you need to go to college. You want to be an attorney, you need to go to college. But if you're going to go to college, you have no idea what you're going to do with it at the end of the day. You're going to go get a communications degree, or you're going to get a general business degree and just have a good time at college. It's really a waste of money. Until you know what you're going to do with it, you don't need that. Because I watch people that go to college and they're learning, you know, they could go to college for some of the roles that are in our organization, and they're not teaching them anything that is going to bring them value into the job that they're performing right now. We're teaching them everything the college didn't teach them because the college didn't teach them what they're actually going to need to know to be successful in their career. So I think that, you know, the whole college thing is really got to be, we need to rethink that over. And it's just for most people, you know, I think the average, what's the average college debt is something like $40,000. That's ridiculous.
Ours is just about double that.
Oh, in Canada, it's even more.
Yeah, it's between 70,000 to 80,000 for a 4-year program.
You're in the hole already. You know what it is? It's middle class mindset that you need to go. This is what you need to do, and you're going to come out of school with debt. Like, that is not worth it at all. There's just, unless you're doing it and you're going to become a doctor or there's some professional degree that you're really sure you're going to get a return on an investment. But it's just another middle-class mindset thought process of that you got to go to college. That's not true.
Yeah. And I like that though. You must be intentional. I know myself, I went to college here. I went through electronics engineering, graduated, started in the industry, was good at what I did, but I wasn't fulfilled. And I wouldn't have known that right prior because it was something that a mentor of mine, he's still a mentor of mine today. I worked for him and he suggested I go back to college because I was, you know, I needed to learn more and then come out of school and work for him in a high level. And it just wasn't something that was really for me. And I ended up moving away from it, right? Getting into the computer industry and stuck with that for a decade. It wasn't really my thing either until I really found my complete passion. I went through different evolutions. And the reason I bring that up is those listening, it's okay to pivot and change. You can go through many different changes within your life and just be honest with yourself. Always have that reflection, right? Always look into yourself and go, why am I feeling this way at the end of the day? Why am I feeling icky? Why am I feeling dirty? Maybe it's not your calling. Maybe it's time to change. Maybe it's time to pivot.
Yeah. And before you can figure that out, and you've got to like, do I know what my real purpose is? Do I know, like, what do I want my life to look like in 10 years from now, in 20 years from now? What does it look like? And, you know, what's going to fulfill me and that it's going to bring meaning to my life. And then I want to back in all my targets and everything I'm going to do between now and those points and enjoy the journey and understand where I'm going. And then this whole destination and vision can evolve over time. But you've got to have like a bigger picture in mind and a bigger purpose. Otherwise, you're never going to find anything. It's always going to be less rewarding and fulfilling than you expected it to be. You're always going to be disappointed. And every time it gets hard, you're not going to have that greater purpose behind you to push you through it where you're going to need it, because everything's going to be hard sooner or later.
So, Stephen, one of the things that I kind of found really intriguing reading about you on your entrepreneurial journey is that, you know, very few understand the power of marketing and advertising, especially as early as you started to adopt it in the late 90s. What inspired you to adopt digital marketing strategies like SEO and PPC advertising and literally revolutionizing the industry's marketing approach with what you do?
It came down to one thing. I hated cold calling. So
I love it. I hate it too.
Yeah. An irony is that it is necessary in sales. You need to be able to cold call. In life, you really need to be able to cold call, but it was really inefficient. We were so small and there was just a couple of us in sales. And I was like, oh, it's gotta be a better way. It's gotta be your better way. How do we get these people that need us when they need us to call us so that I'm not, you know, it just seems so much more efficient. And so at that time, we just started, hey, what do we got to do? Our dad, we got to create a website. This is 1998. He's like, a website? I'm like, yeah, we need a website. And he's like, I don't know. So he didn't buy into it. So I taught myself website designing and I did all the work in the evening. So it didn't take away from the day. So that, like, I would go home to the gym, then come back home and work on a website at night, work on digital marketing. And, you know, when we started doing that, that was when Google advertising started and they were like a million search engines and a click was a penny. So there was a low entry barrier and it wasn't much risk at the time. So even though my dad didn't very uncomfortable with any kind of change in the business, didn't want to take any risk whatsoever. There was minimal risk for him and I kind of just did it. And then all of a sudden it started working and he's like, couldn't say anything about it. And then it was too late for him once he noticed what was happening to basically interfere with me doing this. So that was really big for us. And so we went from like a regional electronic wholesale distributor in Northeast to now, okay, the geography didn't matter. We went national in the United States because now if you search for what we sold, we showed up everywhere in the country. And we got a real head start on it. And that really helped like propel us to a certain level to get from just a couple million dollars in a few years. We like maybe brought it to $10 million and ultimately bring it to a $50 million company.
Wow. Yeah. Early adopters of any form of new technology or new thought processes, even that doesn't even necessarily have to be tech based, seem to go through a little bit of, you know, that uncomfortableness, but look where they are today. You know, look where Amazon, where would Amazon be today? There wasn't an early adoption of what he was trying to do, or, you know, Netflix, for an example, with videos and the list goes on. Early adopters, people listening or watching, are really the people that steer the ship, right? They're the ones that are controlling the rudder of the ship. They're not on a rudderless boat. Anybody that adopts things after the fact, like I look at SEO today and I look at the teams that I have hired to work on my business, and some people still think it's the de facto standard and other people are saying, no, it's not. And, you know, at the end of the day, it was probably back when you started that it was really key to being engaged within that structure. So it's interesting to hear how you were tenacious, working on it at night. I love it.
Yeah. Yeah, that was, yeah. So my dad, you know, when I started working for my dad, we had a family business, and it was started off as a good experience, then evolved into a really challenging experience, and ultimately required me to buy my dad out. And it was a really tough experience for me with that. That was a big challenge for us, because my dad, when I asked you about it, anyone act as an anchor in your life, my dad became my anchor. And he was anchoring me back, and he was holding me back, not intentionally, but it was what was happening. He was holding the business back, but you know, there was only so many things I could do at night and evening, and certain things had to start happening for the business that he was opposed to, because he just didn't embrace evolving the business.
Yeah, see, now that I understand a little bit better what you meant, my father, like working for him, pushing a broom, and all the way up to, you know, deciding whether or not I was going to go away to college. He wanted me to take over his business, but we were always like sparks, right? We could have great conversations, but I was tired of feeling like I was being taken more advantage of than person A beside me, because he has a lot of staff, expected to work hours they wouldn't work or do things that they wouldn't have to do because I was his kid. And I think it was right. That nepotism thing. He didn't want people to think that I was getting any favors. Yeah. And I walked away from it. Right. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I have regrets about it, but he was an anchor in the sense that he didn't tell me how valuable I was to him, or how valuable I was to the business, and how I could have, you know, how we could have gone to the next level. Cause there was things that I wanted to do. I wanted to computerize this business. Absolutely not. I wanted to do this and that. So I can relate to what you're saying, but at the end of the day, it wasn't that I quit on it. I wasn't going to quit on me. And I had aspirations, I had dreams, and I had things that I wanted to do. And one of them wasn't running a farm equipment dealership, which is what my dad had until the day that he ended up selling the business and retiring 20 some years ago. But bottom line, we have to be able to stick to our guns, and you stuck to your guns. And I can't even imagine what that was like. I've had other people on my show that have gone through tumultuous situations where taking a family business over, because at the end of the day, no disrespect to your dad, similar to my dad, their mindset was camped. They were stuck in, my dad was stuck in the old part catalogs or the old card, pull out the drawer and look up the flip, 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 find the card. How much inventory is there? Okay, we got to write down and order more, where we could have computerized and made things much more efficient, could have increased sales, could have made it so that we didn't run out of things because somebody didn't check the card properly and thought, oh, there's one left when we should have had five, where we could have, you know what I mean? There were things like that I went through, as well as yourself. And I think our parents were just camped in their mindset. They got comfortable. Whereas we were the generation like, screw being comfortable. Let's try this new stuff out.
Yeah, that's right. Like, and for me to start working in my dad's business, I said, I just can't come in here and put my feet up on the desk and ride his coattails. Like, I felt the obligation to take it to the next level. And, you know, to certain degrees, he was allowing me to do that, but he always pumped the brakes on me. And then as it started getting bigger and bigger and I started making a greater impact, it got uncomfortable for him. And then he was, you know, it was a lot of friction. And it's got to the point like, hey, dad, either I got to go or you got to go. I'm looking to buy the business for whatever it's really worth, we'll get an evaluation on the business, we'll get appraisal on it. And, or I'm going to go start my own business and do the same thing. And I was the villain in the family for about a year. And today I'm the hero in the family. So it all works out.
Yeah, I can relate to that villain thing. I don't know if for me necessarily is that word, but I had so many, because my dad's one of 18 kids. My mom's one of 9 kids. I have lots of relatives, lots of family, friends, grew up in a small rural community of 10,000 people. And the amount of flack I got, why aren't you taking over your dad's business? Are you stupid? My gosh. You have a golden goose that can be handed to you and you're not taking it. Cause they didn't understand it, open up the book and look inside. They seen the facade, the outside of what they thought, right? Not saying anything negative about my dad. They didn't see the fact of what I was wanting to do and knew would never, ever happen with my dad. And I wasn't willing to put myself through that emotional grief. So I just moved on with my life. But I had more than one villain. My goodness, my dad's my uncles and aunts, my dad's, I'd run into people even in the city where I live now in Edmonton. It's an hour away. I moved here and I'd run into people, or I'd come home for the weekend, or I'd come help him on a weekend because he was, you know, strapped and needed some help, and I'd have time and I'd go help him out to make a few extra bucks. And, you know, it's never too late. You could still take over your dad's business.
I have a question. Were you the oldest of all your siblings?
No, youngest.
Oh, then why was it you?
Like, two older sisters. They had no absolute desire or interest in to be involved in his business. I was the one at 12 years of age. I was the entrepreneur. My first entrepreneurial experience was taking on a couple paper routes, having to collect money, having to deal with doors slammed in my face because they couldn't pay. My dad seen I was tenacious, that I could take stuff. I had health issues, but I would still go out in the blizzards because I didn't have Florida weather. I'd have 10 feet of snow and I'd be out delivering the paper. And, you know, then I'd go work for him in the summers to make extra money and I'd still deliver. I had all these things going on. I was the one that was right when my sisters now as adults, when we have conversations, they don't ever say they wish my dad would have offered it to them because they had zero interest because it was a male dominated clientele. Once in a while, you'd have the wife coming in, but 99% of the time it was the farmer coming in and it was either farmers, I love you, but you're never happy. You're either too much rain, not enough rain, too much sun, not enough sun. Oh, damn it. I got hail. I got this and that. And the cussing and the swearing and the anger and the, you know, it's like a roller coaster ride dealing with that kind of clientele. They would have never, you know, my sisters, if you're listening to this episode, we've already talked about it. You would have never been able to handle it. You would have literally melted down. Whereas I could stand up to them, even as a young kid. I wouldn't let them talk to me. My dad wouldn't let them talk to me disrespectfully, but he'd always encourage me when they'd leave. Okay, next time, this is how you deal with this. Right. Don't put up with that. Be respectful. But if it gets too heated and my door is closed or one of the managers here knock on their door and say, hey, can you come out and deal with something here with me? Right? Mm. He says, sometimes in life you need support, right? Yeah. And it's okay to ask for it, but try first, right?
Absolutely.
It's never a failure if you've tried. If you need help, that's okay. That's just a different stepping stone in life. So yeah, I was youngest of three.
Yeah, and it's amazing. It is important to ask for help. So many people are afraid or have too much pride to ask for help. And like that comes down to mentorship, or helping an associate. Just there's nothing wrong with asking for help. And you're going to get a lot further and have a lot more impactful life because when you ask for help, and then when you learn to ask for help, you'll learn how to properly help other people better as well.
Well, yeah. And the message that person that I could ask for help, like in my dad's circumstance, that could come out, might not even be in the fact that they were older. It's just they had a different way and tonality of delivering because I was still maturing. I still had a lot to learn. Maybe my wordsmithing wasn't up to date like it is in my 50s, using the right words to get across the different impression. Same result, but different word, understanding different, tonality. So excuse me, we can learn from all these people.
Yes.
We really can. And I learned some great things from some of my dad's staff. They were awesome. They never treated me like I was spoiled. If anything, they'd come up to me and go, sorry, your dad was so hard on you right now, right? They would. And I go, that's okay. He is who he is, you know, and I kind of, because I never knew, right, if they were sincere. I still was so young. I didn't know if they were trying to goat me in or if they were actually supporting me. But really in life, don't we look back at those things? And that's when we really, that lesson is cemented in my life. I look back and go, wow, those people taught me a lot. Mm. Wow, that farmer that come in that was a jerk to my dad taught me a lot. Right. Yes. I learned a lot. I learned how to that life is all about relationships and good, concrete, sound relationships. And I learned stuff from my dad. Like, it's okay to tell a customer, you know what? There's the door. Don't let it catch you on the ass on the way out. Please don't ever come back. He wouldn't yell at him. Please don't ever come back. Right. And if they get more defiant, if one of his staff didn't say something, it would be him. if you come back in that door, you're not going to go out in the same way that you come in, right? he would, but that was back in the 70s into the 80s. It was like, you know what, we'll tolerate a lot, and then we're going to have a knockdown drag out fight, and you're going to not like it, because he wouldn't tolerate them talking disrespectful to, he'd take a lot more than he'd allow. If they talk disrespectful to the staff, oh my gosh, my dad was like, it was like, oh, that's game on. All right. But anyway, we digress away from the fact that, you know, at the end of the day, life is an evolution. It's about mentorship. It's about working hard on things. We all have our origins, good, bad, or ugly, that define who we are today. You and I have a ton of commonalities, which I've really enjoyed. One of the last things I wanted to talk to you about was the work-life balance, right? I know that's really important for you. A lot of people don't understand it. Me, my work-life balance ties right into my core values for my life, right? Talk to me about work-life balance.
I don't believe in it.
Okay.
Yeah, so I don't look for work. I look for work-life alignment. So when I hear work-life balance, that is something that we're all programmed to talk about, work-life balance. Like, oh, hey, make sure you work as little as possible so you can live. The thought that just the principle that I'm not living while I'm working is awful to me. So my work is so fulfilling, and I align the work with the life I want. So I have work-life alignment. And that's, I enjoy the work. And there are many, many times and moments during the course of a week that I could not tell you if I'm working or just having a good time right now. And when you can create purpose in your life and really drive impact and align the life you want with the work you're doing, it's going to be really awesome. And if you're like searching for work-life balance, the work you're doing is very unlikely aligned with the life that you want. And if you don't know the life that you want to create, whether it's what you want another year from now, 5 years from now, goal comes down to goals, 10 years from now, how you want to help people, what kind of example do you want to set for your children, for your family, for your community? Like, do the impossible so that they believe more of what's possible, so that they get inspired by you. If you're not doing all this, then you're, oh, what's, I want my work-life balance. I hear people who work 40 hours a week, 42 hours a week, and they don't have work-life balance. I'm like, your life sucks. You're going to be miserable for the rest of your life if that's really what you're all about. Because I don't like pay attention to the hours I'm working or not. And if you're working 40 hours, you're working a part-time job anyway. You're not going to be very successful. I can tell you that, because you're not ambitious. You're not really driven. You're not going to really move the needle. The people that are really you're competing with are going to events. They're developing themselves every weekend. We talked about this earlier. They're listening to podcasts. They're reading books. They're working their ass off because they're so motivated by their goals. They're so inspired to help other people. This is the top performers, what they do every friggin' day. And the people that look for work-life balance are going to be stuck in the middle class, and they're going to be dependent on their government, whether it's the Canadian government or US government.
Yeah, I like that alignment. And that's so true, though. Like, what I do for people, like, you think about it, Sunday, right? A couple days ago, people will say, well, I don't work Sundays. I got to have a proper balance of time off from work and that. And, you know, and I'll go to them, really? Like, I get asked all the time, and I don't even know what day of the week it is.
People will
go, what do you mean you don't know what day of the week it is? Well, I know for sure one day it's Sunday, because I'm a faith-bearing person. I go to church, so I do know that Sunday. What do you do with the rest of the day? Well, I had a client appointment today. What? You had a client? Yeah, well, that's when it worked out for my client. I had a doctor come over to my house on Sundays. He's busy. He works 6 days a week in his practice. He's a younger guy. He's in his early 30s. And I said to him, that's the second Sunday in a row. Oh, sure. Come on over. Right. Bring your girlfriend over. Let's do this. We'll go through this. And, you know, we'll work on some more stuff. And when they left, I felt great. I felt fulfilled. They felt fulfilled. Big smiles on their face. Oh, thanks for giving up some of your time. Oh, I said, no, I'm not giving up nothing. I'm investing time in you, investing time in me. I said, it works out both ways. I said, especially when I have great people like you that are great conversation. So, you know, work-life balance isn't, I tell people it's impossible too. I just, you know, at the end of the day, there's certain things that are more important to me in my life, right? My listeners know for the last 30 years of my life, I pretty much, because I would have been, it's going to be close to 30 years ago, or not 30 years, 20 some years ago that I got divorced and became a single parent of my kids. A few years later, where I had them full time. So I decided I worked hard when they were working hard in school. And then summer times, I took the summer off. And people go, well, how can you do that? Well, because I worked my ass off. I put more effort in than other people did. They were 9 to 5. I was like 6 to 2 in the morning, right? I'd go 4 or 5 hours of sleep. And the list goes on. And I'm not saying that to pat myself in the back, because I knew I had a goal. One of my goals was, I ain't working in July and August. My kids are off. We're going camping. We're going fishing. We're going, you know, on holidays. And did I skirt my responsibility with my clients? No, I just didn't take any new. I knew when I had to stop taking on new business, and the people that wanted to deal with me in the summer, if it was important enough, I dealt with them, brand new clients. But all my current clientele knew what my core values of faith, family, and work, which are my top three, were. And again, may not fit into what your definition of core values are, but for me, that's what my life was. I took the summers off. I don't regret it. I got tens of thousands of pictures and memories and experiences, and my adult kids, when they were home at Christmas, they're saying, oh, remember when we did this or did that? Or all of a sudden my phone will go off and bing, it's a picture that they took when they were younger, right?
Right.
That they've snapped, maybe it's an old, you know, the old actual film pictures. I took a picture with their phone. Dad, remember this? And they'll have a little blurb. We did this. Oh yeah, I remember that. To me, that's the balance I wanted out of life. I wanted every summer off. So that other 10 months, I was go hard or go home.
You aligned the work with the life you wanted.
Absolutely. And now today, I still take the summers off. Now they're adults. I used to go camping and they'd all meet up. This last summer, I rented a big ass cabin that could house 15 of us in there. And we were there for 10 days and had a blast. Right. I paid for it, brought all the food in. We hung out, created more memories, because now it's not just their memories, it's my grandkids' memories too. Right.
That's so awesome.
Yeah, I love my life. But anyway. It doesn't show. I know I seem pretty down. I get it.
No, you don't. Well, I know I love the best thing you said is today is that you love your life. I love that. You know, not a lot of people say that. And if you can just live a life that you love and you're not regretting and it's fulfilling you, it's like, what more can you ask for? Right.
Oh, absolutely. It's a choice. Right. It's all a choice. I'm so tired of people saying, you know, this person did this to me, that person done that to me, blah, 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 blah. All I hear is that old Charlie Brown, like, yada, 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 blah, blah, blah. It's just like, whatever. Life's a choice. Yes, we all are at levels in our lives where we're at a struggle. But if you even have a spark inside of you, even a spark, there's so many good resources out there to water that spark.
Yes.
To make it so that you can actually grow outside of yourself and move forward. And I don't care. I have listeners on Quarter Analytics that are in their 70s that listen to my show, right?
Yeah.
Guess what? Those people have a spark inside of them. Or why are they listening to my show?
Yeah, that's right.
It's never too late to give a heck.
Yeah, that's right. And they're still living. They're not waiting to die. They're living. So it sounds like they've got a growth mindset. They want to learn more. They're inspired. They want to be inspired.
And their health's better too. When you're working on your giant computer, your brain's a giant computer, the more you feed it, it needs to be fed. You can starve off disease. You can starve off, obviously nutrition's important and exercise. But at the end of the day, if you're not feeding your brain, you're just you're the walking dead, walking back and forth, go to work, go home, get paid on the hamster wheel of life, creating yourself, you're living great. All of a sudden you're up here, now you're down lower and lower and lower, and then you're dead.
Yeah, that's right.
Right? You got no legacy. Your legacy is created while you're living.
That's what Sharon Lecter will call that drifting. That's Outwitting the Devil, amazing book.
My favorite book, actually.
Okay, so that's a great book. Everyone should read
Outwitting the Devil.
Yeah, so there's a difference between there's drifting in life and actually living an intentional life. And
I would suggest people get that book though on Audible, because literally the devil's interviewing and it's going back and forth, and then Sharon stops in between and talks about it. People that are listening, that book was written in the 30s. If it would have been released back in the 30s, he would have been killed. He probably would have been assassinated, right? But it is so spot on to today's society. It'll blow your mind.
Yeah.
Blow your mind. I have other books that were in my top three. That went to my top one. I love that book. I'll literally go and listen to specific parts of it just because it makes me feel a certain way. And I understand the intentionality of the book too, right? So anyway, I'm glad you brought that up. Great book.
There you go.
You think you and I actually listen to books or read books? Oh my goodness. Podcast, personal development. This is probably a lot for, okay, if some of you that are new to this show, we're sorry you had to drink out of a fire hose today, but you needed it. You needed to satiate your thirst, and we're here to make sure that you elevate and take that first baby step. So Stephen, if you had to give our listeners one last closing message, what would you tell them in regards to giving a heck and never giving up?
Okay, so giving a heck, I think it's really important in life to be very curious. I think curiosity is something we get, we kill that in a lot of children, and then we have a harder time as adults. So you want to give a heck, you're going to be curious and care and come from a place of heart. Because we're all leaders, and leadership is influence. We could be a bad leader, a good leader. And when you give a heck, you're going to influence people positively. And I would just say that to everybody, anything is possible in your life. As if you can dream it, you can achieve it. You just have to be able to have big goals, not let anybody hold you back from dreaming big, and go after it and just never give up, because you're going to hit obstacles. You're going to feel like quitting. It's going to get hard. You're going to expose all your vulnerabilities, but those are all opportunities for you to grow and develop as a person. It's just part of the journey.
Wow. What a fantastic closing message. I really appreciate that. Curiosity, right? And really at the end of the day, what else do kids hear most of their lives? We kill their curiosities, but we're constantly saying no to them. No, 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 no. I forget, I read a stat somewhere, like literally most kids today, even our generation or today's generation, they hear no hundreds of thousands of times before they're adults.
Yeah.
What a negative impression in our minds.
Yeah. And we're telling, when they're very unreasonable about their negotiation tactics, they'll never don't take no for an answer. They keep coming back and we kill that. We tell them to be safe when, now they're not going to take any risks that are like, they should take risk. You should be a little bit dangerous in life. If you're safe, you're not going to do much. And then when you're a parent, I know this as a parent of three daughters, and now I have to remind myself, wow, look, you got to be careful, Steve, because you don't want to, a lot of these attributes they have are beautiful talents. They're going to be very useful as adults. Might not be very convenient for me as a parent right now, but don't destroy that in them right now.
Well, I know. I have four daughters, by the way.
Okay.
I got four daughters. My youngest is a boy. But yeah, that nurturing aspect and not passing on the learned behaviors, the things that we wish wouldn't have happened to us, it's a challenge. It's different from my oldest daughter to my youngest son, how I parented them. And as I personally developed and learned things to, instead of nurture or have that conversation with them to try to calm them down or be willing to say, you know what, right now, this conversation isn't going anywhere. You're too upset, or I'm not feeling the greatest. How about we separate and get back together in a couple days or a couple hours? Sometimes it'd be a couple hours, depending on what we needed to discuss. And you reevaluate where you're coming from. I'll evaluate things too, and we'll have another conversation. But we both have to agree there's no tension in this conversation, right? You can be a little bit angst, but there can't be you attacking me with your tonality or your body language, and vice versa. And I obviously, from the first to the fifth, I got a lot better. And have I gotten better even after my son? Absolutely. I'm on a lifelong journey to be the best version of me, because everybody I encounter deserves it. And the person that deserves the most is me, because I want to feel glad all the time. I want to be grateful, right?
100%. So,
yeah, Stephen. So what's the best way for our listeners to reach out to you, brother?
Yeah, great. So I've got a podcast, Steve Lags Unfiltered. You can find that on YouTube or all the audio, Spotify, Apple podcasts. Social media, Instagram, Steve A. Lags, or you also can find me on LinkedIn, Steven with a PH, Lago Marcino.
I'll make sure all of that goes in the show notes. For those new listeners or viewers to my show, simply go to giveaheck.com. So that's giveaheck.com. Go into the podcast area. You can click on the menu. It'll open up. You'll see Steven's picture. And below that, you'll see abbreviated show notes with all his links for his social media and for his podcast, which I had the pleasure of experiencing a little bit of it last night. I think you'll be pleasantly surprised and enjoy the experience. And I look forward to someday maybe being on that show myself. I'm going to put a little dig in there. Anyway.
There you go.
So any last words, Stephen, before we wrap up?
Hey, just go for it in life. You got one life to live as far as we know, and make it a big one. Make it an amazing life so you don't have any regrets when at the end of that journey. Let's go.
Absolutely. Thanks so much, brother. Appreciate that. So thanks so much for being on Give a Heck, Stephen. I appreciate your time and sharing some of your experiences so that others too can learn. It is never too late to give a heck.
Thank you for taking time out of your day and listening to Give a Heck. If you find value, I'd appreciate you sharing with your friends and family so they too can learn how to live life on purpose, not by accident. So you do not miss the next episode, please subscribe on your favorite podcast platform, and please also post a review. I look forward to reading your comments. This has been Dwight Heck. If you want to check out other podcast episodes or today's show notes, please check out my website, giveaheck.com. And until next time, together, let us all strive to give a heck.